Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on February 14th, 2019, and is current through the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 episode, Saints of Imperfection, so beware of spoilers. And though, actually, there won't be any spoilers this week because we are recording just before Saints of Imperfection drops. So we won't be talking about that episode this week, but we will probably have a mention of it in next week's episode.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a golden age of Star Trek. There are four television shows on the way, with news this week that there is a fifth just around the corner, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is the co-host of Reading Trek, also on the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network, Marty Ali. Marty, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here. Great to be back for another Weekly Trek. I don't think I've been on Weekly Trek since post-STOV.
Oh my goodness. Well, so much has happened. We've had like at least three TV shows announced since then.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great time to be a Star Trek fan.
It is a great time to be a Star Trek fan. Well, that leads us right into my first question, Marty, which is I want you to tell me something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What has got you moving at Warp 10?
Two words, Jet Reno.
Jet Reno. Tell me more.
I love this character. I love Tig Notaro. I watched her specials on Netflix even before she was announced for Star Trek and fell in love with her then. And then to find out that she was going to be on season two of Discovery, I couldn't think of anything more wonderful. And she portrays this kind of sarcastic take on a Starfleet officer. Her deadpan humor is absolutely perfect, and I love it.
Yeah, she's fabulous. I've really enjoyed the two appearances that she's made on Discovery so far, and I like the fact that we have sort of more of a traditional engineer type character to add to the crew complement. And I think you're right. She's really funny. I like the fact that she's very sarcastic and sort of doesn't take any guff. And I've heard people talk about her and say, well, you know, she's a little too much. And to them, I would say just this, that if you spent 10 months stranded alone with nothing but a group of critically ill patients to look after, I think you'd probably be pretty salty as well.
Yeah, I definitely would be.
Yeah. So my pick this week is actually a collectible that I just got in. Last week, we talked about how Eagle Moss was releasing a set of busts, character busts for Star Trek characters. And this week, I received the third bust, which is Worf. And it is actually really, really cool. It's this really nice bust, probably stands about 4 or 5 inches tall. And it's Worf in his Next Generation uniform, seasons 3 to 5, with the shorter hair that he had at that time, holding a Bat'leth. And I'm a huge sucker for character busts and the ships that Eagle Moss does, but I think the Worf one is really, really cool. So I've got it out on my mantelpiece. I'm displaying it proudly and looking forward to more of the releases that they have coming up, including Janeway. I think we've got 7 of 9 on the way, Michael Burnham, Captain Picard, and others. So it's a cool little line. I recommend, if you're into that sort of thing, checking it out.
If I had more space to display these things, I definitely would be on board. But I think for now, I'll just have to appreciate them online.
You know what, Marty? I think you're potentially the smarter one of the two of us. As a guy who's got kind of boxes full of this stuff crowding up his second bedroom.
I have my Starship collection jammed into my closet right now. So I think I'm done with collectibles for a while.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, there is a whole new line that we have to talk about this week, but we'll get to that when we get to talking about merchandise at the end. All right. So with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So the big news this week, which dropped yesterday, is the news that we are very likely staring down the barrel at a fifth Star Trek television show. As initially reported on Variety, but Deadline and Hollywood Reporter also had the same story, this Star Trek animated TV show, separate from the Mike McMahon-led Lower Decks, and an animated show that is targeted towards children is on the way, and that CBS is in advanced talks with Nickelodeon about being the home for this Star Trek animated TV show. We know who the creators are, Kevin and Dan Hageman, who have story credits on movies like Hotel Transylvania, the Lego Movie, and the Lego Ninja Movie. One thing we don't know yet, and what wasn't in any of the news reports, is what the concept for the show will be. We just know, based on what Alex Kurtzman said about a month ago when he was talking about the potential for a Star Trek animated TV show separate from Lower Decks that would be targeted more at kids, that it would be kind of a story about how heroes kind of found themselves, but we really don't know anything more than that. Marty, how are you feeling about another Star Trek animated TV show coming to our screens?
I'm all for more Star Trek. The more Star Trek we get, the better. I'm especially impressed with the creative minds they're getting behind all these projects. I loved the Lego Movie. I thought it was one of the best animated films I've ever seen. So having those writers as the showrunners of this show, like A+. I'm curious about why they are going to be putting it on Nickelodeon potentially, because that is owned by Viacom, which, as we know, is not getting along with CBS right now. So that should be interesting to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. So yes, Nickelodeon is a Viacom network, and Viacom and CBS used to be one company. And in 2006, they were split. And that's why we have the separation between the Kelvin timeline movies and the Star Trek TV shows with Discovery that are all set in the Prime timeline. But it's also not uncommon for a TV show to appear on a different network than the production house. A really good example of that is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which was on Fox for many years, but was actually made by NBC. And when Fox canceled it, Brooklyn Nine-Nine was picked up by NBC and is now appearing on NBC, so it's all in-house. But yeah, it will be really interesting to see how it will play out on Nickelodeon. I think that is a really interesting choice. I think it's a huge get for Nickelodeon. It seems like they've been, their new network head has been looking for big franchises to kind of revitalize Nickelodeon and bring it back into more of the kind of conversational zeitgeist. So super exciting. And I've said this on several previous shows, but anything we can do to kind of grow the next generation of Star Trek fans, I'm all in for, because I want to be watching this show, some variation of Star Trek, for the rest of my life. And the only way we can do that is by exciting young people into the franchise, getting them to understand the ideals of Star Trek and having them love it in the same way that we do.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great plus for having a kid show on Nickelodeon, is to get more people into the franchise.
So turning from that, which hopefully there'll be a formal announcement soon, we'll know more about the concept. And obviously when we do, you'll hear it here on Weekly Trek. But let's turn to Discovery, because we actually had some really interesting Discovery stories this week, diving behind the scenes of the franchise. So the first, there were two articles on trekmovie.com, one article about the panel, another article with Tamara Devereaux, and then trekcore.com also had an interview with Tamara Devereaux, who is the lead production designer for Star Trek Discovery. The Directors Guild of Canada last Saturday hosted a panel going behind the scenes on Star Trek Discovery. They had 8 members of the Discovery production crew, as I say, including Tamara Devereaux, who's the lead production designer. And there is so much for us to talk about. I highly, highly recommend you head over to both trekmovie.com and trekcore.com to read the interviews with Tamara Devereaux and also read the recap of the panel. Trekmovie.com has a really large image gallery of the slides that they were showing, because there's a ton of really great production concept art. They talked about what it was like to make the show, some of the choices they made around designs, a few kind of pieces that I pulled out that I think it'd be really interesting to talk about. One, obviously, is how elaborate these sets are. I mean, and how much effort and care the production puts into these sets, but also the Star Trek tradition of reusing and redressing sets is alive and well with Star Trek Discovery. So Michael Burnham's science lab is, for in season 2, is a redress of Lorca's Ready Room. And also perhaps the most elaborate set change is the Section 31 control center that we've seen in the last couple of episodes is actually the bridge of the USS Shenzhou. They sort of remove the floor from it to create a second level, but the outer ring of consoles and the ceiling is all the same. Marty, what were you picking up from these interviews?
I picked up a couple things from the photo gallery on trekmovie.com. I found a photo of the Discovery Bridge with kind of a more like rounded view screen, which I thought was really interesting. And I actually didn't realize how many sets had been redressed and reused. I didn't realize that the Shenzhou and the Discovery transporter rooms were the same set.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too.
Yeah, I thought they were two different sets, but now that I think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. I loved the little tidbits we got that Lorca's ready room was turned into a science lab, but it was turned into an off-bridge science lab. So it's still in the same location that it was when it was Lorca's ready room, which is interesting how they converted those things so quickly in the storyline. But
yeah.
And then of course the big new set that they talked about was Pike's ready room. They made sure to mention that it was accessible by turbo lift, which I thought was interesting. But apparently that set had a lot of little tidbits from Pike's personal history that they filmed, but we didn't actually get to see on screen.
Yeah, it's a great set. I really love the that like lovely wooden table that he has.
The lightning table, they called it, with a lightning bolt in it.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
All good stuff. Yeah, so much there.
Yeah, a couple of other interesting things I picked out. There was some concept art for Kronos, the Klingon homeworld. And it was more of the sort of style that we had seen in Star Trek The Next Generation for the Klingon buildings. And I would love to see something like that show up on Star Trek Discovery and establishing, because we haven't really seen much of an establishing shot of the surface of Kronos. It's mostly been indoor sets that we've seen, like the Shrine of Molor or the High Council cavern, but we've not really seen it from the outside. So I'd love to see something like that. And then the last thing was, in last week's episode, Heather and I had a conversation around Rebecca Romijn's interview about being number one, in which she talked about how there was a moment when she was on a set that she wasn't allowed to talk about, that she got very emotional. And Heather and I both speculated that that was the Enterprise Bridge. But in TrekMovie.com interview, Tamara Deverell says that she did not design the Enterprise Bridge. So she's talking about the Spock's quarters set that we saw in the season premiere, Brother, and basically acknowledges that it's a redress of the Discovery guest quarters set. And if they'd had more time, they would have built a set for Spock's quarters that had probably been closer to how it looked in TOS. And then she goes on to say, I just wish I got to design the Enterprise Bridge. If I were to do something like the Enterprise Bridge, I would draw a lot from the original. Which is really interesting because she is the lead production designer. And so that does seem to indicate that we are potentially not going to see the Enterprise Bridge, because why would she be talking wistfully about not having had the opportunity to design it? She could be lying, which, you know, has been known to happen.
Yeah. It also could have been designed by somebody else. Maybe they redesigned it. I don't know. But I think that would be kind of one of those gray areas you don't want to change too much. So maybe they are intentionally not going to the Enterprise Bridge.
That's the other thing I'm thinking, is maybe it was designed by somebody else. And also it could be something that, you know, maybe they do just avoid it entirely. And what Rebecca Romijn was talking about was some other different set. I'm not entirely sure what that could be. But I guess in, what is it now, episode 5? So in 9 weeks, we will know the answer to this question about whether we see the Enterprise Bridge or not.
Do you want to know what my theory is on all that?
Give it to me.
So they also talked about going to Talos 4.
Yes.
Which was one of number one's big scenes in The Cage. So I'm possibly thinking that Rebecca Romijn was talking about the Talos 4 set and being on that set and being where Majel Barrett portrayal of number one once was, and that got her emotional.
Oh yeah, I like that. It could very well be. I mean, that is kind of at this point the only kind of original series milieu that we know for sure is coming up. So yeah, I mean, if the Enterprise Bridge does not appear in Discovery, and everybody, when they've been asked about it, like Anson Mount, when he was at the Christmas with the Captains in Ticonderoga in December that I was actually present for, he made some comment about, oh, you guys don't know if you see the bridge yet, do you? And people, and we said no, and he just then kind of didn't say anything more about that. So, you know, it is possible that the answer is no. And you're right, it could be that Rebecca Romijn was referring to Talos IV.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we'll have to watch and find out, but I think it could go either direction at this point. Who's to say?
Who's to say? Hey, in 9 weeks, we will know the answer one way or another. Well, switching from production design to costumes, comicbook.com had an interview this week with Gersha Phillips, the lead designer of costumes on Star Trek Discovery, which is a great interview. Again, I recommend seeking it out to read the full thing. But there were two kind of pieces of this that I thought it would be fun for us to discuss. One is that she talked a little bit more about the original designs for the uniforms of Star Trek Discovery. The blue uniforms that we see on the show were actually a late addition. The original idea was to have costumes that were a little closer to the original series with the three clear division colors. But the designs that they came up with never really resonated with the showrunners. And so they ultimately decided, rather than be beholden to doing some interpretation of the original series, let's set that aside and kind of develop our own aesthetic. And that's where we got the blue uniforms from. Though we did see those original designs very, very briefly in the season one finale, Will You Take My Hand? In the scene towards the end of the episode where the crew is receiving their medals, they're in a large auditorium. If you look in the back rows of the auditorium, you will see these uniforms that are almost certainly off the rack for the original costume designs for Discovery. They look much more like the TOS uniforms, but don't look like the season two TOS uniform kind of variant that we've seen the Enterprise crew wearing in season two. And then the other fun kind of little story is that when they were designing the Enterprise costumes for season two, they had filmed a whole day's worth of shots before they realized that they had left off the rank insignia from the sleeves. So they had to overnight design and add the rank insignia to the sleeves. And then for that first day's worth of shooting, go back and digitally insert the rank insignia on everybody's sleeves, which I thought was just like it was a fun kind of attention to detail moment. They wouldn't have gotten away with it from the perspective of us Star Trek fans as viewers. They might have thought they got away from it from the perspective of, oh, no one will care, even though that's not true. But Marty, what did you think about this interview with Gersha?
I thought this was a great interview. She had a lot of interesting things to say. I think you pulled out the same things that I was going to pull out of the interview as well. But it's also interesting that she talks about those new Enterprise uniforms as kind of a, you know, this show is being filmed not in the 60s, so obviously they have to update the design. So their take on it is kind of like, well, if this universe continued from this standpoint, this would be the evolution of those uniforms.
Are you a fan of the Enterprise uniforms from season two?
I absolutely am a fan. I want all three of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're fabulous. I really like the vibrant colors. I really like the way that it is sort of an evolutionary design from the Discovery uniform. You have the slightly offset zipper. You have the same collar piece, though the collar piece is black to get you closer to the original series. I think it's a really, really cool, well-designed piece that both fits with a TOS aesthetic, but also feels very Discovery at the same time.
Yeah, and it seems like it was like an easy design process because they just took the Discovery template and put division colors on them.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's super cool. So let's turn from Discovery quickly to Picard. There have been more stories that have been written. So Patrick Stewart is still on his press tour for The Kid Who Would Be King, and everybody wants to ask him about his return to Star Trek. And so there have been a few little slivers of details that have come out this week. Nothing as substantive as the last couple of weeks. So far, he's talked about how there are 3 years worth of, potentially three seasons worth of stories that have been mapped out, has talked a little bit about his process, the process he went through to decide to return to the series. And this week, there were a couple of stories on trekmovie.com that didn't really tell us very much, and I would caution folks to read too much into them. So one of the stories was around two interviews that he gave on his press tour, which has now moved to the UK. One on the Graham Norton show, which is on the BBC, and then one with an Irish television show. On the Graham Norton show, he says that the show is set 20 years after the end of The Next Generation. And then in the Irish show, he says that the show is set 20 years after the last time that you saw Picard. We've been under the assumption up till this point that based upon his comments at Star Trek Las Vegas, that the show was going to be 20 years after Star Trek Nemesis. This is the first time he's potentially implied that it's 20 years after the TV show. The news story headline was a little misleading because it said he specified the year when clearly there's a lot of confusion around that. I would say that he's been on a long press tour. He's gotten a lot of questions and not to read too much into it. The other story I would just really caution folks to read too much into is, again, unfortunately, trekmovie.com. I'm sorry, guys. But there was a second story around Sunequa Martin-Green had been asked about the Picard show, and she had said that the name of it was Star Trek Picard, which in the first Trek movie story that I was just talking about, where he talks about when the show is, he says the reason that they have not released the name of the show is because the name of the show gives away a key detail about the plot or the concept that they aren't ready to tell people yet. So I really highly doubt that the name is Star Trek Picard, because literally the only thing we know about the show at this point is that Jean-Luc Picard is in it. So I think the working title, because that's what everybody has been calling it, is The Picard Show, The Picard Series, The Return of Jean-Luc Picard. I think that's more what Sunequa Martin-Green meant than this is what the name of the show is going to be. But we'll set aside that negativity. Again, I've told you guys, it's my intent to bring you the facts. And I just felt like both of those stories were a little misleading in some ways. But let's turn to the positive. Marcy, how excited are you about Sir Patrick Stewart returning to Star Trek?
I'm so excited. I can't wait for this show. It feels a lot like when we were waiting for more news on Discovery after that first announcement. We're just kind of clamoring for details, and so we're taking any little thing we can find and pulling it and twisting it and trying to figure it all out. But I'm just going to be patient and wait for some news from StarTrek.com and see what comes from there. But can't wait for this show.
And he did say again that the plan was to start shooting in the spring. So it seems like, and I think he even mentioned the sort of April timeframe. So it seems like, you know, April's getting closer and closer. So if the plan is to shift that back, and which would therefore almost certainly impact the release date, it's getting to be the point where we would start to find that out. So fingers crossed, all is on track for an April shoot date so that we can get the show by the end of the year. And maybe there'll be something ready in time for San Diego Comic-Con and or STLV for us to actually finally see something of Picard's return.
I'm thinking that they will most definitely have a teaser trailer ready for us for STLV. At the very least.
Fingers crossed. I would love that. I mean, especially if it's coming out, you know, they said late 2019, early 2020. We had our first Discovery trailer for season two at San Diego Comic-Con, which was July, and the show premiered in January. So it would make sense based on the production timeline that they would have enough to show in the summer for us to get something at one of those events.
Yeah, I think it's almost a given that we're going to get at least, if not a teaser trailer, we're going to get a whole lot of details on the show for those events.
Absolutely. Including, I hope, some news about maybe other cast members from the 24th Century shows returning in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. That's just a wish.
Ooh, Vulcan salute crossed.
Vulcan salute crossed. That's absolutely right. Well, since we're on the topic of The Next Generation, let's turn to the big product announcement that we have this week, which is that Eagle Moss, the creators of the fabulous Star Trek Starships collection, the Star Trek Discovery Starships collection, the Star Trek graphic novels line, now the Star Trek busts line. If you have any money left in your wallet and any space left in your home, which I know at this point I certainly don't, but if you are one of those people, there is a new product for you, which is actually quite exciting. It is a part work, build your own Enterprise D. And this thing is big. It is over 70 centimeters in length, which is, you know, probably a good 2.5, nearly 3 feet long. It will have issues released every fortnight, in which you'll get little pieces of the ship that you will either click together or screw into the other pieces of the ship that you've collected. The first issue actually is already on sale in the UK. It's currently only on sale in the UK. There's been no word yet about a US release date or a release date for the rest of the world. But that's how the Star Trek Starships collection started, and that now has launched in many, many countries. You can pick up the first issue for £1.99, so it's roughly $3 or $4. The second issue is £5, and then the regular issues after that will be £9.99. It's about between $15 and $20, roughly comparable to purchasing one of the, actually a little cheaper than purchasing one of the small, the official Starships collection that they've been released. So for those of you who know the production of Star Trek The Next Generation, there are actually three Enterprise D models, a 6-foot model that started off the series. Then in season four, they built a 4-foot model that was a little easier to shoot. And then they also had a 2-foot model. So this Eagle Moss design is sort of a compromise between the three, favoring the look of the 6-foot model, which is the most iconic. The ship is supposed to light up. The nacelles will light up. Windows will light up. But it also seems like they have made some design sacrifices, like there are no windows for 10 forward. There are no windows around the edge of the saucer. They said that was just something that they weren't able to accommodate and also get the electrical kit inside so that they could light it up. But Marty, if you had $1 million and a 15-room home, is this the kind of thing that you would be collecting?
Absolutely. I think the concept is interesting of giving you a little bit to build every 2 weeks.
Yeah, my one concern about it is that, you know, with these part works, there was one that launched. Well, actually, I don't even know if it got to the stage of launching, but there was one that was planned by D'Agostini a few years ago that Rick Sternbach was involved in, where it actually had the deck plans as well that would go inside this model of the Enterprise D, and that never really got off the ground. So I'd be a little worried about the line not necessarily reaching the end, because of course it's the kind of thing where you can't just pick and choose one issue or the next, because otherwise you don't have a complete model. So that's just my word of warning to anybody who's about to jump right in. But it is a really cool model, and it's probably the only way you're going to get a 2.5-foot long Enterprise D. So for those of you who are excited by it, I say go right ahead. I will limit myself to the official Starships collection, the Discovery collection, and the bus. I think that's probably enough for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, money and space are a concern for me, so I will not be picking this up. But for all our friends with expendable income, go for it. Send us pictures. Let us know how you like it.
Yes, absolutely. So that is it for the news this week. Now let's have a little bit of fun.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So every week, I and my guest will give you a theory, a bit of speculation, a wish that we have for the future of the Star Trek franchise. So Marty, what theory or wish have you got for me this week?
So for this week, I have been thinking about how we've had a lot of tie-in with TOS in Discovery, and I don't think we're done with original series characters appearing in Discovery yet.
Okay.
So my wish slash theory is that moving into season three, we're going to see possibly more story concepts slash characters from the original series weaving their way into Discovery. I can't say who, but maybe it'll be someone like Scotty or Bones, or even revisiting a story concept and doing a little prequel story from TOS.
That would be very cool. If you were the executive producer and I told you that you could make a short trek doing a prequel story for one of the TOS characters, who would you pick?
Uhura, hands down.
Uhura, that's a fabulous choice.
I always have wanted to know more about Uhura. She's one of those characters that didn't get a lot to do until the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know more about her in general.
I think if I were to then make a second, I think I would agree with you about Uhura as the first pick. I think I would want one on McCoy. I'd like to know more about his story before he was on the Enterprise, and even before his kind of first appearance in the Kelvin timeline movies, because we know he was married at some point. We know he had a daughter. It'd be really interesting to see McCoy at an earlier point in his life. And since Discovery is 10 years before the original series, it would fit with the timeline very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my theory this week is actually a little bit of a bummer. So I'm sorry to everybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my theory. So Ted Sullivan who is a co-executive producer for Star Trek Discovery, was one of the show's biggest defenders in season one, very active in interacting with the fan base, co-wrote with Joe Romanowski one of the best episodes of Star Trek Discovery season one, Lethe. He also co-wrote with Aaron Harbarts and Gretchen Berg the season two premiere, Brother. I think that Ted, unfortunately, is no longer working on Star Trek Discovery. Obviously, we know there's been a lot of turnover in the crew, in the production staff. Tonight's episode, Saints of Imperfection, is actually the last episode in which Aaron Harbarts and Gretchen Berg were the showrunners before they were, before Alex Kurtzman came in and took over. And I think that Ted may have left at some point later in the season. He's nowhere near as active on Twitter as he used to be. He used to talk about each new episode when it came out. He's not done that for any of the season two episodes, even the one that he wrote. So I hate to say this because I think he's fabulous. And I had the opportunity to meet him in person in Star Trek Las Vegas. And I hope that if he has moved on, it is to bigger and better things, and I'm sure there's lots to look forward to from Ted Sullivan. But my theory is that, unfortunately, Ted's not working on the Star Trek production anymore, and that we won't see potentially another episode written by Ted, which is a super bummer, but is where I think my head's at.
I think you're absolutely correct on this. I think they sort of cleaned house after season one, and there were, unfortunately, many casualties that we wish had not happened.
Yeah, 100%. So, Ted, hopefully if you are working on Star Trek, you'll pop up again and let us know that my theory is completely wrong, and I couldn't be happier if that were true. But if you're not working on the show anymore, I hope you are working on something equally as fabulous and getting paid a ton of money for it.
Yeah. He's a good writer. I think he'll do well, whatever he does.
He's a great writer and clearly such a big fan of Star Trek. So it was a real joy to have him on the show for whatever amount of time we had him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet it to me at Weekly Trek and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all we've got time for on this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Marty Ali, for joining me today. Marty, tell us, one, how can people contact you to continue the conversation? And two, what's the next book that you guys have coming up on Reading Trek?
So if you want to contact me, you can reach me at Time Travel Marty on Twitter. You can also reach my other shows at Reading Trek and at Queer Trek Pod, which I host with Christian Jewell for Reading Trek and Heather Barker for Queer Trek. And the next book we're covering on Reading Trek is going to be the TNG novel Metamorphosis, which is all about kind of a Pinocchio story with how Data actually becomes a flesh and blood human.
Oh, very cool. That was the first giant novel, wasn't it?
Correct. It was the first non-numbered TNG.
That's right. Yeah. You know, that's one of the only TNG books I actually haven't read. So I will make sure to tune into that episode and maybe I'll even read the book as well.
It should be a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me personally at Alexander T. Perry. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. If you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And I think shortly after this episode drops, we will be unveiling a host of new perks for patrons of the network that are really exciting. So please consider checking us out and having a look.
They're coming so soon.
They are coming so soon and they're super exciting. I was just reviewing the list.
They are.
And they are very, very cool. And to our existing patrons, all of the perks that you get right now, the unedited episodes, the access to the patron roundtables, and the patron supporter badge will remain perks for everybody at all levels. But we are going to build in some additional perks for folks who are providing support at slightly higher levels.
It should be super awesome. I mean, I can't wait to implement all these changes.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for us this week. I hope everybody has a fabulous week. I hope you all enjoyed Saints of Imperfection. And until next week, live long and prosper.